We're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. Okay, we've been talking about dinim involving truma that became tome and various angles on that. The last thing we were talking about was we've been talking about the idea, if you have tome grapes or olives of truma, is there a way to squeeze them and get juice out of it, juice or oil, as the case may be, that would actually be tahor. So we started the sugya by saying that Rabbi Yochanan had said that yes, you can squeeze them less than a kibetz at a time. Then we said, on the other hand, Rav Chista disagreed with that because he held that when the fruit becomes tame, the juice becomes tame together with it. It's called the machlokas is whether mifkad pkidi is the juice considered like it's just stored in the fruit like in a container. So then when the fruit becomes tame, the juice doesn't. Or do we say that it's mivla bli, that it's considered that it's embedded in the flesh of the fruit, and therefore when the fruit becomes tame, automatically the juice does also. We mentioned something about if you have truma that became tome, if it's bread or it's oil, then you're allowed to use it for fire. You're allowed to use it for burning. You're allowed to use it for burning. So that shows, therefore, that we're not concerned about takola. We said in connection with the grapes and olives. Or actually, in connection, we said earlier with berries and grapes that if truma that became tame, there's no way of doing anything with it. Why don't we say that you can squeeze it out less than a kibetz, like Rabbi Yochanan says? And the answer is even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that there is a possible problem of takola that you might come to eat them. So we said, what about the bread and the oil? Why is there not a problem of takola? And we said, because what you do is, in the case of bread, you throw it into your pile of firewood, and therefore it becomes dirty, and nobody would want to eat it afterwards. And in the case of oil, you put it in a dirty keli. So now we're going to take up that point and continue discussing it. Gufa, madlikin, I'm going to give my own base. Madlikin pass over shemen shel truma shenitmes. You're allowed to light a fire with bread or with oil of tame that became tame. Of truma that became tame, because we said in the case of the bread you throw it between the wood, and in the case of the oil you put it in a klimos. But Abaya Amar Mishmei Dechizki, Abaya qualifies that in the name of Chizki. Of Rava Amar Dvei Yitzchak Dvei Rabbi Yitzchak Bamauta Amar Rav Huna Lo Shanu Ela Pas. Now, when we say bread, we mean specifically bread, where if you throw it among the wood pile, it will become disgusting, and therefore you're allowed to do that. Avochiti loy. But if you had a similar kind of thing with wheat, then not, because even wheat, after all, is hard and tough. Maybe it's not like chite kudenaisa, which we learned earlier in the sechta, is very tough, but still, a grain of wheat is hard on the outside. So even if you throw the wheat into your wood pile, it's not going to be so disgusting. It's not going to be so dirty. It's easy enough to wash it off, and it's easy enough to wash it off and use it. So then you still might come to eat it. Not out of your way. Well, first of all, in those times when they had less food, maybe you would go out of your way. But the point is, just the fact that you have it in your wood pile in and of itself is not going to make it most, and you might come to eat it. So the question is on mine. On the other hand, so that's Rav Huna, or that's Rav Huna and Chizkia are saying that no. Rav Yechanan amar afilu chiti. Rav Yechanan disagrees with that and says no. The same thing can apply even to wheat. So the question is on mine. Nechush duma osi behen l'dei takola. Why aren't we concerned about takola according to Rav Yechanan? The answer is kid Omer Rav Ashi b'shlikosa u'mi'isasa, just as Rav Ashi said, as we're going to learn in a few lines, that you have a case where the wheat has been cooked, and it therefore became, and therefore if you throw it in the wood pile, it becomes miustik. Hachanami b'shlikosa u'mi'isasa, the same thing we're talking about over here, where it's cooked and therefore it's miustik. Rashi learns that what we're talking about is that after the wheat became tame, there's still a way around it. What you do is you take that weed of truma, which is tame, you cook it. So now it becomes disgusting. Now it's not hard like the original wheat. Now it's more like bread. Therefore, if you throw it into the wood pile, then it becomes dirty. So therefore, you have no problem. There's no problem, says Rabbi Yochanan, of that you may come to eat it. Whereas Rav Huna and Chizkia take the view that after all, you might eat them before you cook them, or even while you're cooking them. You have it cooking on the stove over there. You may forget that it's Truma Tumeya and eat it. That's what. That's true, but here we're not talking. We're not even talking about the chametz angle of it over here. It's true that grain can become chametz, but here we're not even talking about the chametz angle. Here we're just talking about the Truma Tumeya angle. We're talking about throughout the year. In other words, when we say madlikin bepas shel truma, we're not talking about Pesach, because Pesach chametz is also about, no, you can't light a fire with pas. No, we're talking about we're talking about during the rest of the year. But anyway, so Rashi explains that we're talking about that the wheat became tame and then you're cooking it. Tosfos says that no, we're actually talking about it would have to be that they were cooked before they became tame. Because otherwise you still have the problem that like Rashi says, everybody should agree, not just Rav Huna, that while you're cooking them, before you cook them, you might end up eating them. Anyway, so hochanami bishlikoso miyisasa. So the same thing over here, the same answer can apply. Why would Rabbi Yochanan allow it over here? Is because it's cooked and therefore it's miyustik. So again, Rav Huna would still disagree, but Rabbi Yochanan in that case says there's no problem of takala because it's going to be cooked and therefore if you throw it into the wood pile, it'll be disgusting. Because the point is, you want to be able to keep it in the future for firewood. You don't want to, this is Truma Tumeya, you can't eat it. So you want to be able to save it for firewood. But if you save it raw, then even Rabbi Yochanan is going to agree that there's a problem because of takala, because you may come to eat it. Therefore, what you do is you cook it and then you're allowed to keep, and then you put it into the wood pile. And now you're allowed to keep it around until you decide you need it for firewood. Yeah, maybe you're. Well, lav dafka, your wood pile is exposed to the rain and snow. I mean, the point is you want to keep your wood dry, so maybe you have it covered. But whatever, the point is just the fact that the cooked wheat is among the wood itself makes it dirty and disgusting. Okay. So v'heicha itma de Rav Ashi, what was the original context where Rav Ashi said what he said? Aha, it was in connection with the following. The amr of oven barav acha amr of Yitzchak. Abba Shol Gabol Shabes Rebbe Hoya. Abba Shol, Lav Dafka, this is the famous Tana Abba Shol, it could be somebody else of the same name, but whatever it was, he was the one in charge of kneading dough in the house of Rebbe. You had in those times, nowadays we just have, you make bread at home, you mix up a batch of dough, you use machines or whatever. In those times, apparently there was a specialized, you find in other places also, there was a specialized job where a person would have the job of kneading the dough. Anyway, so Abba Shol was that in the house of Rebbe. They used to warm up for him hot water using a fire made with wheat of Truma Tumeya, Lolosh Behen Isbatara, and that way he was and he would use that fire to warm up water to be able to knead dough that would be made Batara. Now this is long after the Churban, but still you had people, as we talked about a day or two ago, you had people were still able to be Tahor in those days. They still had leftover Parah Aduma ashes. And Rebbe was Oichol Cholin Batara, even though Rebbe is not a Kohen, he would eat his cholin he would make sure that his cholin were Tahor. We're tahor to the level of truma. It's called cholin altaris truma or cholin altaris hakodesh. One second. So the point is, there was truma tmeya because you still had people who took truma, and inevitably sometimes it became tamei. So one second, we'll talk about how you're allowed to do that. So the point is, we're not concerned that while you're using that for firewood, you may end up that those are going to touch the dough of the dough of chulin shanasu altaris hakodesh and make them tamei. So that's the question. Am I now? Why nechush duma asibuhu de takola? Don't you have the problem of takola itself that you might eat the wheat itself? So there's the original context where Rav Ashi said we're talking about that they were cooked and therefore they were disgusting. So therefore, in other words, what they did is they had this Truma Tumeya. We did as they just said. According to Rashi, after it became Tomei, they cooked it. According to Tosfos, it became Tomei after it was cooked. Whatever the case, what we do is then we take it, we put it together with the wood pile. Now it becomes disgusting. Nobody's going to eat it. So there's no problem with Takala. The chiddush of what Rav Oven Barav Acha is saying is that then they would use this for firewood when they're preparing dough, which needs to be altaras truma or altaras hakodesh, without concern that one is going to touch the other. Even the pot that he had the water inside, right? Because food can't be metame the pot, right? the food that you're burning underneath, it can't be metame the pot, because food is not metame kalim, as we learned in the first parak. Anyway, how do they come to have truma tmeya? So Tosfos argues that it would have to be, this could only work if there were koyanim in Rebbe's household where they're preparing this dough for the whole household, including those koyanim. Otherwise, how is Yisrael, like Rebbe, allowed to use truma tmeya for firewood in the first place? On the other hand, there are other Rishonim who learn that maybe there's a difference between, we would say, that Yisrael is not allowed to feed Truma Tmeya to his animals or something, but maybe there's a special heter that he's allowed to use it for firewood. Whatever, because more respectful, because there's a cost of whatever it is, even though the Ramban, I think, holds this way, even if there are no Koyanim in the household. Whatever the case, the point is that we see that Rav Ashi mentioned that concept of the wheat being cooked, and therefore now it's soft, and therefore it can easily become dirty and disgusting, and therefore they could use it for firewood. So we can apply the same thing to what Rav Yechanan said before about using wheat of Truma Tmeya for burning, because it's exactly the same kind of thing. Okay. Well, you cook it and then you dry it out, maybe. Whatever the case, the point is that okay, so now the Gemara is going to start a new discussion, also having to do with Truma, which it has to do with Truma Tmeya, so it relates to the previous discussion. But eventually, on Amud Beis, we're also going to relate it back to something that we learned before in the sugya. So the Gemara tells Abaya ba Oven v'Rabchanani ba Oven Tana Trumas be Rabba. Abaya ba Oven and Rabchanani ba Oven, maybe they were brothers. They learned Masechta Trumas in the Yeshiva of Rabba. And by the way, you see an interesting thing from this. Trumas is not one of the Masechtas that has Gemara Bavli, but we see that they were actually learning it in the yeshivas above El. They just didn't. When Ravina and Ravashi wrote the Gemara, they chose not to write a Gemara on Trumas itself, because whatever we need to do, it's not the dinim of Masechta Trumas are not applicable outside Eretz Yisrael, and they figured whatever we need to know about the dinim in Masechta Trumas is scattered in various places in Shas, such as our sugya over here. But they were actually learning all the Masechtas. Anyway, so they learned Trumas in the Yeshiva of Rabba. Pogabu Rava Bamasna. Rava Bamasna one day met up with them. Omalahu, he says to them, "My Amritu b'Trumas Devemar. What kind of chidushim have you learned regarding Trumas in the Yeshiva of a great person like Rabba?" In other words, you're learning Masechta Trumas over there. You must have learned something new and exciting. So share it with me, please. Amrulei my kashalach. So they say, obviously, the way you're asking the question shows you have some kind of kasha. What is it? Let's see if we can figure it out. Amalahu. So he says, the problem I have is this. There's a Mishnah in Trumas that says, Sile Trumas Shinitmu, plants of Truma that became Tomei. It actually describes, let's say, for example, you have cabbage or leeks of Truma. Now you have, when you plant vegetables, there are some kinds where, when you plant anything, there are some things where you plant seeds and the seed rots away in the ground and then the plant grows from it. That's called Dovashet Zare Kola. And then you have things like, for example, like the examples Rashi is giving over here, cabbage or leeks or whatever. You plant the actual thing, you can replant the actual thing itself in the ground, the actual head of cabbage or the actual leek, and it will stay and it will grow larger in size. That's called Dovah She'en Zarei Kola. So if you have such plants of Truma, let's say, for example, a cabbage of Truma that became Tomei, the Shoslan, and then you replanted them back in the ground, Tahoda Milatame, then they're tahor in the sense that they're not metame other food. The point is, Rashi says, now that they're attached to the ground, they're not considered food anymore. So on the other hand, va'asurin milech o betruma, on the other hand, they're still also to eat as truma. Now, at this point, we assume, why are they also? We mean it's still just as also as it was before. Before it was truma tmeya and nobody could eat it, not even koyanim. Now it sounds like still koyanim can't eat it. So the question, Rava Bamasna says, my question is, well, if they're tahor in the sense that they're not metame anymore, because them being attached to the ground means they're no longer considered food, amai asurin milachol, then why are they also to eat? How are they still truma tmeya in one sense but not another? They're not truma tmeya in the sense that they can be metame other food, but they're truma tmeya in the sense that the koyanim still can't eat them. What's going on over here? Amrulei, so they said, good question. You should know, hochi omar rabba. This is what Rabbah answered. You asked what chiddush we learned in Rabbah's yeshiva. Here's the chiddush we learned. My asurin, asurin lazarim. You're right. When we say these things are osur, we don't mean they're osur for kohenim to eat. The tumma in them went away. Now they're like truma tahora again, so the kohenim can eat it. We mean it's also for zarim to eat because it's still considered truma. The planting takes away the tumma status, but it doesn't take away the truma status. So then the problem is, Rava Bamasna says, "Oh my kamash malon." So in that case, then what is the chiddush of the Mishnah? Gidule truma truma. The Mishnah just wants us to know this idea that gidule truma, that things that grow from truma are considered like truma, which would apply to any kind of plants, whether it's dover shezare kola like wheat or dover shein zare kola like these cabbages. In that case, tanena. Well, we already learned that in a Mishnah in that same parak, Gidule Truma Truma. So we don't need another Mishnah to tell us the same thing. So if we said, as I was wondering originally, that as I thought originally, that the Mishnah is telling us that Zorim are also, that even the Kohenim are also to eat it, that's a bigger chiddush. That even though it's still attached to the ground, it's still considered Truma Tmeya. But if you're telling me all it is, it's considered Truma Tahora, that's Gidule Truma, when we already have a Mishnah that tells us that. That it's considered Truma. That it has the same status of truma. The chitema gidule gidulin. So you might say that maybe this asurin milachol is, remember, we're talking about dover she'en zare kola. We're talking about things that don't decay in the ground. They just keep on growing larger. And you have, you could be talking about gidule gidulin, growths from the growths, meaning Rashi describes, if you take a cabbage and we plant it and the leaves grow larger, that's considered gidulin. Then you have, let's say you also have new leaves develop, or those are considered gidule gidulin. Rashi gives another example of gidule gidulin would be, let's say, for example, you plant a bunch of small onions together, like a bunch of pearl onions, and eventually, if you leave them growing underground long enough, eventually they merge together. You know how sometimes you buy an onion in the store and you cut it open and you find it's got a double core. Yeah, so that came from that. Two onions that merged together and ended up growing new layers around them. So those new layers would be gedula gedulin. Tosfos actually has a different definition. Gedula gedulim would be what grows from the plant first. Then let's say you uprooted it, then you replanted it, and then more things grew from that. That would be gedula gedulin. Whatever the case, you're going to tell me that that's the chiddush of the Mishnah that I was asking you about, that when it says asurin milechol, it does mean it's also for zorim. So the point is, we have one Mishnah that tells us gidule truma, and then this one is telling us even gidule gidule truma. You're going to argue that's a chiddush? Can't be. Umay kamash malon. So still, what's the chiddush in it? B'dava she'en zare kola. We're saying that that's the chiddush regarding something like cabbages or onions where they don't decay in the ground. Honami Taneno, that we also learn in a Mishnah over there in Trumas. We Tevel Gidul of Mutarin. When it comes to Tevel, even though it's officially Tevel, Miruach was done, it's Chayiv and Meiser, etc. But if then instead of taking Truma and Meiser from it, you planted it, then Gidul of Mutarin, then what grows from it is Mutar. Bedava, in other words, you'd be able to eat a snack from it like any other newly grown produce before Gmar Malacha, before it's brought into the house. But bedava shezare kola, that applies only if zare kola, like for example wheat, where the original seed rots away in the ground. Aval bedava she'en zare kola, but if it's something like onions, where it's not zare kola, where it keeps on growing, the same original onion keeps on growing in the ground. I feel a gedulin, gedulin, asurin ba'achila. Then even gedulin, gedulin are asur. So now, okay, that Mishnah is talking to, that Mishnah is talking, now the point is, in other words, that, okay, with Tevel, what we're saying is it's not a matter of truma, it's a matter of chulin. But still, we can learn from that to truma, that The concept of gedula truma is derabanan anyway. Rashi points out midaraisa. Once you planted them, how can they still be considered truma? The whole concept that we're saying that zorim can't eat them is midrabanan, and we see in the case of Tevel that there's no distinction between gedulim and gedule gedulim, between the first and second growths. So the same thing should apply to Truma. So therefore, we already know that gedule gedulin is osir. So again, if the original Mishnah that I'm asking you about is saying that even the Kohenim can't eat them, there's a big chiddush in that. Even though they're planted in the ground, they're still considered tamei. That's a big chiddush. But if all it is telling us that Zorim can't eat it, then we already have Mishnayos that tell us in that perek that tell us the same thing. What is this one adding? Ishtiku. So they were quiet and they couldn't think of an answer to that. Omrule midishmi aloch baha. So then they asked Rava Bamasna, okay, we give up. We're stumped. Do you have anything about it? Maybe you heard from your debate an answer to that. Omalahu. So he answers them, yes. Hochi omer Rav Sheshes. Yes, this is what Rav Sheshes said. My asurin asurin lakoyanim, that it does mean that it's also to koyanim, but not on the grounds that it was tomei. It's true, once it's planted, the original tuma goes away, but hoyol v'ifsilu luhu v'hesach hadas. But the reason is because this tuma, when you planted it, it became tomei from hesach hadas. So actually what it is Rashi explains like this. You have a mitzvah to guard truma, and that means not to have hesach hadas, where then, as we're now going to discuss in the Gemara, that can make truma and kodshim tomei, which now we're going to have a sugya on that subject. So therefore, when they became tomei to begin with, then he was masiach das. So now they became posel, and that psul still continues to exist after they were planted. So therefore, So yes, the original tuma went away, but the psul of hesach hadas still exists. The question is, hanichal amando ama hesach hadas psula gufabi. Now we're going to have now a discussion between Rabbi Yechanan and Rish Lakish. What is the nature of the psul of hesach hadas? If you say that it's psula gufabi, if you say it's an intrinsic psul, meaning that it's not because there might have been another psul, it's something, it's a certain extra chumra that the chachamim applied to kodshim and to truma, to say that intrinsic means that it comes from itself. But in other words, you can have a psul which is because there might have been some other psul. In other words, one way of looking at it is hesach hadas could be psul because in the time when there was hesach hadas, it might have become tamei and you didn't realize. That's called psul tuma habi, as the Gemara is soon going to discuss. On the other hand, you have the possibility psul aguf habi, nothing to do. Even if you know for sure, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, even if Eliyahu now comes and tells us that it didn't in fact become tomei, just the fact that there's hesach hadas itself intrinsically is enough to be metamei. So if you say that hesach hadas is psul aguf, well then shapir, then okay, then we understand what happened over here. Even though the psul of tumah goes away when you plant this tumah, because it's planted in the ground, and as Rashi said, once it's planted in the ground, it's not considered food anymore. But then now you have a new problem of hesach hadas, so then shapir, so then it's good. But if you say hesach hadas is only psul because it might have become tumah, my ikla meimer, then what are you going to say? What are you going to say? So why are they tumah? Why are they posel? Because of chashash tumah. After all, even the tumah itself, the actual tumah itself that they had, went away when you planted it. Why are you concerned about a chashash of other tumah that it may have gotten? Obviously, while it's attached. Well, no, before it was in the earth. Once it's in the earth, it can't become tumah. No, that's what we're saying. If we're saying that hesach hadas is only because during the time of hesach hadas, it might have become tamei, but this is already tamei, and we're saying that planting in the ground removes the vadai tumah, so surely it'll remove the suffix tumah as well. You can't say tofel chomer min ikur. You can't say that the actual tumah that it had went away, but you're still concerned about hesach hadas because of the possible tumah that it caused. How does that work? So how does Rav Sheshes's answer work according to that? De itmar, as in fact we have a discussion about that. Hesach hadas, when we talk about truma or kodshim, that they become posel as a result of hesach hadas, what is the nature of that psul? Rabbi Yechanan, I'm a posel, psul tumahavi. Rabbi Yechanan says the psul is only because it might have become tame during that time. And therefore, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, if we had a way to know for sure that it didn't become tame, then it wouldn't, and then the Hesach Hadas, in fact, wouldn't be a problem. Reb Shimon Lakish on a Psula Guf Avi. Reb Shlakish said that it's a Psula Guf, that it's an intrinsic, it's a freestanding soul of its own, nothing to do with what else might have happened. Just the fact that there was Hesach Hadas alone is reason enough to say that it's no good. Meaning, what's to touch that out into practical terms? Rabbi Yechonon Amar Psul Torah Habi Shem Yave Eliyahu V'Taharena Shemin Lo. Even if Eliyahu Navi were to come and tell us that it is Torah, now we can't. When Eliyahu Navi comes, we can't say that he can decide halacha for us. Torah Lo B'Shamayim He. But what he can do is he can tell us the facts. In this case, it's a factual question. Did it become Tomei during that time of Hesach Hadas? Factual questions we can ask Eliyahu HaNavi for. So there's a question, right? You're talking about, so there is actually, when we talk about Yahweh Eliyahu, we don't mean when he comes before Mashiach. We're talking about just nowadays, if he comes as a neshama only. Where there you have, where, you know, there we still say total of it. Right. When he comes to earth, when Eliyahu HaNavi comes to earth, for example, right before Mashiach comes, and he comes as an Ashama Beguf, yeah, then he's like any of the other Chachamim. Then he can give his opinion in Halacha like any of the other Chachamim. But then, fine, you know, then he's just doing it in his capacity as a Chacham. But here we're talking about his capacity as a Navi and in his capacity as a Neshama that's able to see anything. So Torah Halacha we can't accept in that capacity because Torah Lo B'Shamayim He. Because Torah Lo B'Shamayim He. So it can only be that he's telling us is the thing in fact Tomei. That we could accept from him. So Rabbi Yechonon would say, Shem Yaveh Eliyahu V'Taharena, Shemin Lo, we will listen to him and we will accept that it is Tahar. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Lakish, I'm a Psula Guf Habi, Rabbi Shimon Lakish says that that Hesach Hadas is an intrinsic psul in the sense Shem Yaveh Eliyahu V'Taharena, Ein Shemin Lo. Even if Eliyahu comes and tells us it didn't become Tomei during that time of Hesach Hadas, it's not going to help us. It's not going to help us because we're going to tell him, very nice, thank you, Eliyahu, for telling us it wasn't Tomei. But the fact is, there was Hesach Hadas, and that all by itself is able to make it puzzle. Actually, Tosfos asked the question at the end of the first perek. We had the case where there was a barrel of truma that became suffic tomei, and we discussed that according to Rabbi Yeshua, we said you can put it out in an open area. If until now it was indoors, for example, you can put it outdoors in order that eventually maybe it'll become vadei tomei, and then you're able to burn it. So why don't we say as soon as you're masiach das, then you're allowed to, then you should be allowed to burn it. So some of the mafoshim answer. Because over there, you're not actually Masiach Das from it, because you still want to make sure it doesn't touch other things and make them Sufik Tomei. The whole point is, you want this barrel itself is Sufik Tomei. You want to make sure that no other food of Truma or Kodshim touches it and becomes Sufik Tomei as well. So therefore, you are going to keep it away from them. That's not Hesach Hadas then. Hesach Hadas would be if you're completely ignoring it. You're putting it outside because like this, it was Suffolk Tomei, and Rabbi Yeshua says you can put it outside, and that way it's more likely that it'll become Tomei. It's more likely, for example, that a Sheretz will fall into it, and it'll become Vadei Tomei, and once it's Vadei Tomei, then you're able to do with it what you do with Truma Tzmeya. But it's still the reason why you have to wait for a Sheretz or whatever to fall in, rather than just saying we have Hesach Hadas, we'll burn it right away. Mephoshim explain is precisely because you don't have Hesach Hadas because you're trying to keep it away from other barrels, so it's not Matessa, so the contents of it are not Matami them as well. Yeah. Fine, but you're keeping it outside. But the point is, it's not considered Hesach Hadas of that. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the Gemara has asked the question. How Rav Sheshis's answer would work according to these two opinions. It would work according to Rish Lakish. But how would it work? But how would it work according to the Yechonon that it's only Psul Truma Habi? The Gemara is meanwhile gonna the Gemara is setting that issue aside. And eventually we're going to come up with a different answer about the truma that was planted. Why is it that it's still also for kayanim? But meanwhile, let's talk about this matter of Hesach Hadas. Eisvei Rabbi Yechonon l'Rabbi Shimon Lakish. So Rabbi Yechonon says to Rabbi Shimon Lakish, you're telling me that it's a psul haguf. I have a stira to that. We learn We learn in a braisa, Rabbi Shmuel b'no shel Rabbi Yochanan b'Rekoimer, lul katan hoya ben kevesh l'mizbeach. There was a small trap door, or not really a trap door, it actually says guma chalula. There was a small open hole in the floor of the Besmikdash, ben kevesh l'mizbeach, between the ramp of the mizbeach and the mizbeach itself. There was a little space between them, as the Gemara tells us in Zvachim. There had to be, first of all, because the mizbeach has to be square, and if you have the kevesh directly attached to it, then it's not perfect. Square, and also because you have to have that when the kohenim go up the ramp to throw the pieces of the korbanos on the fire, they have to throw them. They're not allowed to just place them on. Madam bizrika af basa bizrika. The blood has to be thrown on the mizbeach, and we learn from a hekesh and a pasuk that the meat of the limbs of it have to also. So therefore, they had a little bit of a space between the kevesh and the mizbeach in order to force them to throw it. So in that space on the floor where that space is. But not actually really between the kevesh and the mizbeach, but rather on the west side of the kevesh, in the floor we're talking about. What it is like this. The kevesh was 16 amos wide. The mizbeach was 32 amos wide. So that means on each side, the mizbeach was 8 amos wider than the kevesh. So you have, therefore, so you have the mizbeach, you have the kevesh in front of it, and you have a space on one side and on the other side of the kevesh where there's mizbeach without kevesh. So in that area, so corresponding to, if you drew a line from that, you'd get to the area, you'd get to the actual space between the kevesh and the mizbeach, but this is actually a little bit west of that. This is not underneath the kevesh, but rather next to it on the west side of the mizbeach. So there's a hole in the floor over there. There, if you had a chatas oif that became posel, then they would throw it in there. And the reason why they put it over there, Rashi explains, is because that corner of the mizbeach is where they would do the malika of the chatas oif. A chatas oif, the whole avoda of it is done on the bottom half of the mizbeach. So the kohen is standing there on the floor next to the mizbeach and doing the malika. If the bird became posel for any reason, then he would put it right there in that hole. It's right there next to his feet. Then you would have ibrut surah, which means they're left overnight. You have now their posel because of lina, and then the next day they would burn them with other kodshim that became posel. In other words, the point is, now, what are we talking about? Why do we need ibrut surah? As we're going to learn soon, we have a rule. There are certain kodshim that are posel that you can burn right away, and there are certain that you have to wait for ibrut surah. The basic rule is whether the psul happened to the korban itself, or whether there was some kind of side thing that happened to it that made it posel, as we're going to discuss in a minute. So if there was some kind of side thing, then you need ibrut surah. Rashi, by the way, is learning that ibrut surah, as we're saying, just means lina overnight, even if it doesn't spoil. Rabbeinu Hananel and some other Rishonim actually learned that ibrut surah means you have to leave it over there until it starts rotting away, until it's not considered basar anymore. Surah means the form of it. So according to Rashi, lina of one night, which makes it possible now it's noiser, is enough to be considered ibrut surah. There's another opinion of it that ibrut surah means you have to actually let it rot. Whatever the case. So Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish like this. Now, when you put the chatas oif in that hole, that's hesach hadas, because you're at that point you're not paying any attention to it anymore. So now what happens? So amit b'shlema psul tur mahabi. If you say like me that hesach hadas is not an actual psul itself, it's only because it might become tummy during that time. Mishumahochi boy ibrut surah. Well, that explains why we need ibrut surah. Rashi explains like this. It's not a matter of putting it in the hole. What kind of psul are we talking about that happened to this bird anyway? That if we're talking about a psul where, for example, it was pigul or it became tameh or the malika wasn't done properly, etc., so then you don't need ibrut surah at all. As we're going to quote in a minute, the Mishnah that says that if there's a psul that's intrinsic to the korban itself, then you don't need ibrut surah. You can burn it right away on the spot. Only if it's something outside of the korban that made it possible, only then do you need ibrut surah. So what would be the case over here where you need ibrut surah? The only case where it would be possible, but pashtus, is where there's a suffix tumah. Wait, what? No, if it's missing a limb, then it's not suffix. Then that's a psul v'gufay. If it's missing a limb, then that's a psul v'gufay. Then you burn it right away. So that maybe it wouldn't even be considered kosher in that case, because it wasn't even kosher for a korban in the first place. So maybe you wouldn't even need to, whatever the case. The point is that most psulim that you can think of that would happen to a bird korban are going to be the kind that you need to burn it right away. What would be a kind of case where you can't be sure whether you can burn it right away would be where there's a suffix tumah. Well, no. If the korban became tameh, then, that's a good point, actually. Well, okay, so maybe if the kohen became tamei doing it, maybe, okay. But the expression psulei chatas ha'oif suggests that the psul is somewhere in the chatas itself, so the question is, so the only case where it seems where that would work is if there was a suffix tumah. So if you're going to tell me, So if you're going to tell me, Rish Lakish, that the whole psul, the psul of Hesach Hadas is a psul aguf, well then all you need to do is you have Hesach Hadas, right? You put it in the hole. Now you have a Hesach Hadas. So if you say it's a psul truma, like I say, Mishum Hachi Boy Ibur Tzura, that explains why we need Ibur Tzura before we can burn it. Shema Yove Eliyo Vitarena, because in between Eliyo might come tell us it wasn't in fact psul after all. We're not allowed to burn Kodshim that are tahor, so therefore we have to put it in the hole until it has Ibur Tzura, and then at that point, even if Eliyahu comes and tells us that it was tahor, it doesn't matter, Ibur Tzura already happened. But if you, Rish Lakish, are telling me that Hesach Hadas is a psul aguf, lama li Ibur Tzura, then why do we even need Ibur Tzura? According to you, just the fact that there was Hesach Hadas is enough to burn it right away. That should be considered a psul aguf. V'hatnan, we learn in a Mishnah, Zaklal, the rule is kol shepsula bigufa, anything where the psul is in the body of the korban itself, for example, the meat of the korban became tamei, you sorif miyad, then you burn it right away. On the other hand, bedam over bailim, if the psul was in the blood of it, let's say the blood spilled, or the bailim, for example, let's say in the case of a korban pesach, the owner became tamei, and now the owners and the people who were going to eat it became tamei, now there's nobody to eat it. So then, to ubat surasan the yotzin leves hasreifa, then you need ibut sura, and only then do you burn it. Now Rashi explains, by the way, that even though when the blood spills, that's a complete psul, but after all, it's not like the flesh itself. Dam and basar are two different things. Therefore, it's still considered an external psul, and you need ibut sura. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying to Rish Lakish, so in this case, if the bird became suffix tomei, and according to you, Hesach Hadas then is considered a psul begufay, so you don't need Ibur Tzura, you put it in the hole, you have Hesach Hadas for a few minutes, and that's enough, then you can burn it right away. Why do you need Ibur Tzura? You could still have a suffix tomei over there. Okay, nevertheless, though, the point is that still, to begin with, when the Kohen was doing the avoda with the bird, somehow afterwards there became a suffix tumah. Suffix, whether a sheretz touched it, whatever. Yeah. So Omalei, so Rish Lakish answers, Hai Tana, Tana Dvei Rabba Bar Avohu, the Tana of that Braisa, is a Tana from the Yeshiva of Rabba Bar Avohu, to Omar, that he says, no, I feel a pigle toan Ibur Tzura. He says that no, even pigle, which is a psul aguf, you always need Ibur Tzura. So therefore, in other words, so Rish Lakish says, that Mishnah that you're quoting at me, that meant that Braisa, rather, that you're quoting about the Lul, about that they have to put in the psulei chatas ha'oif, that would be only according to Rabba Bar Avohu. You're right. According to everybody else, they wouldn't need to, because all according to me, all they need is Hesach Hadas, and then they can burn it right away. Okay. Eisvei. So then Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, I have another contradiction on you. We learn later on in our Masechta, Nitma, if the meat of the korban pesach or whatever other korban became tamei, oishen nifsal abasa, or it became posel. The difference between Tomei and Pasul we've talked about before. Tomei would be, for example, Rishin Latruma, Sheni Latruma, whatever. Pasul would be Shlishi Latruma, rather Revi Latruma, where it's Pasul, but it can't be Matame anything else. Or if the meat was taken, outside the courtyard of the Bismuth. Because here we're not talking about the Korban Pesach. Here we're talking about other Korbanas that have to stay inside, for example, a Chatas or an Asham, which are Kodshim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yizrik. Rabbi Eliezer says you can still sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach, because as we've learned before, and as we're going to learn in more detail later in the Masechta, Rabbi Eliezer holds that even if the flesh of the korban is tamei, you can still sprinkle the blood. Dam afa pishein baser. Rabbi Yeshua Omer lo Yizrik. Rabbi Yeshua says you shouldn't, because he says im ein baser ein dam. If there's no meat available, then there's nothing to sprinkle the blood for. Rabbi Yeshua, Shem Zorah Hurtza. However, Rabbi Yeshua would agree that b'di'evet, if you did sprinkle the blood, then Hurtza, then it becomes acceptable. Then the korban becomes acceptable. Now Rashi learns that we're not even talking about. Now we have the concept that we've learned before, and again we're going to learn in more detail later in the Masechta, that sometimes you say that tzitz is miratza for a korban that otherwise would have been possible, and the fact that the tzitz exists, or that the Kohen Gadol is wearing it, is machshir the korban b'dieved. Rashi learns that here we're not talking about the tzitz, because one of the things we mentioned was that the meat was taken outside the azara. The tzitz doesn't help with that. The tzitz only helps with matters of tumah. So Rashi learns that we just mean hurtza in the sense that the korban is kosher b'dieved. Tosfos learns that actually Rabbi Yeshua might hold like an opinion of Rabbi Akiva that even though the meat was taken out, if the blood was sprinkled, it helps to take away me'ila, and therefore in this case that it makes the korban kosher b'di'evin. Whatever the case, so when we say that the korban became posel, we said nifsal abasar, my nifsal lav behesach adas. Papashtus, the word nifsal mean the papashtus nifsal. What other kind of psul could we be talking about? Tome, we already said. Yotza, we already said. So what other kind of psul would there be? Now, if it was something that where there was a psul in the blood, for example, of chutzlas mane, chutzlas mekoimai, then that wouldn't be considered nifsal basar. And then it's nifsal dam. Then Rabbi Eliezer can't be saying you would sprinkle it. If Rabbi Eliezer is talking about that you're still going to sprinkle the blood, obviously the blood is fine. There was no psul in it. The psul was only in the meat. Once you have nitma and yatza, what other psul could there be? Lav v'hesach hadas. Presumably it would be the psul of hesach hadas. So iyamet b'shlema psul tumah habi. If you say that hesach hadas is possible only on the grounds of that it might have become tomei, as Rabbi Yechon is saying, haynu d'mashkachas le'lod merati tzitz, then that explains why the tzitz can help to be merati, because that's the job of the tzitz. That's what it does, is when you have a korban that became tomei, even though you really shouldn't sprinkle the blood, but b'dieved, if you did, then the tzitz is merati. Eli, I'm a psula guf habi. But if you say that it's a psula guf like you, amai hurtza tzitz, then we're amai hurtza actually. So why is it hurtza even b'di'eved? Forget about the tzitz, Rashi says, because again, the tzitz is not factoring in over here if it was yotze, because the tzitz only helps for tumah. But the point is, if you're going to tell me, so then it shouldn't help. So it shouldn't help for the psula of hesach hadas either. So therefore, the Braisa seems to be implying that even though nifsal abasar, the tzitz can still help. So how would that be? If you're saying that hesach hadas is a separate psul of its own, nothing to do with tumah, then how is the tzitz helping for that? Or how is anything helping for that? A psul is a psul. So the answer is, Rosh Lakish can answer, my nifsal nifsal b'tvuyah. And you're right. You know what? The word nifsal in the Braisa does not mean that it became posel as hesach hadas. It's true. Hesach hadas, I say, says Rosh Lakish, that it would be a psul. It would be an intrinsic psul. It's a psul of its own. A psul aguf habi. And therefore, there's no way to make this korban kosher. What are we talking about? Nifsal means nifsal b'tvuyah. Means that if a tvuyah touched it, like we said before, and therefore it became a revil l'tumah. So it's not tome in the sense that it can be metame, other things, but it's possible in the sense that it itself is not allowed to be eaten. So the question is, yehochi hainu tome, isn't that the same thing as tome in effect? The answer is tre gavni tome. Okay, you have two different kinds. The Braisa wanted to specify two different kinds, one where it can be metame others, and the other one where it itself is tome, but it can't be metame others. So Rosh Lakish would say, therefore, that there's no contradiction from that case. From that case to me, who says that hesach hadas is psul aguf, because in fact the braisa is not talking about hesach hadas at all. It's talking about a different kind of psul. Okay, so the Gemara stops the discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish at that point about Hesach Hadas. This was all a digression from, we were talking about the case of the truma that was planted, where we gave an answer that once you plant the truma tmeya, then you have a Hesach Hadas, and that led us into this discussion. Now we're going to go back to that discussion. The original discussion was that we had a Mishnah that said that if you plant truma tmeya, it's still osur. So what does it mean osur? If it means it's osur to koyanim as well, then why? How does the truma still continue to exist after it was planted? The same way as the truma went away, the same way the issur of truma tmeya for koyanim should go away. And if you say that it just means it's osur lazorim, then there's not really, we argued there's not much of a chiddush in it. And if you're going to tell me that it's a psul of hesach hadas, then that works only according to the shlokish, not according to the yechanan. So now continuing that discussion. The Gemara tells, Ki Solik Ravin, when Ravin went up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Amra L'Shmaita Kamei de Rabbi Yumiya. He told over this discussion to Rabbi Yumiya, this that of Sheshis had said before, that the psul is because of Hesach Hadas. V'Omar and Rabbi Yumiya said, Bavloi Tipshoi, foolish people from Bavel, Mishum de Yasvi Ba'ara de Hashoicha, because they live in a dark land, because Bavel is very low-lying, Amritun Shmaitse de Machashku. Therefore, you say dark statements, like you say statements that don't really make any sense. Alpi Alocha. Rabbi Yirmiyah himself, by the way, was from Bavel. The Gemara mentions Rabbi Yirmiyah, when he was in Bavel, he was not one of the top caliber of Chachamim, but then he moved to Eretz Yisrael and Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machkim, and he became great, and he became one of the great Amiroyim over there. So you find in a number of places in the Gemara where he puts down Bavel, because he had his own personal experience that in Bavel, you don't necessarily grow to your full capacity. The Rambam actually mentions, I think, in one of his Trubas, that there were different times within the time of the Amoraim itself. There were times when they were learning Torah on a much higher level in Bavel than Eretz Yisrael, because in Eretz Yisrael you had Zeres, persecutions, and Shmodes, and all kinds of problems. But then you had times, such as the time of Rabbi Yirmiyah, when it was the other way around, when they were having a harder time of it in Bavel than they were in Eretz Yisrael, because there was a period over there. There was a period over there when there was a new. And we were talking about yesterday in the history class that there was a period there was a new dynasty in Bavel, and for the first little bit they were very fanatical about their religion and very anti-Semitic. We had something about it briefly in Shabbos. Eventually they calmed down and then became more favorable to Jews, but still you had times when, and on the other hand, during that time in Eretz Yisrael, the Romans in their empire were dealing with one emperor after another was getting assassinated and overthrowing the previous one, and they had no time to harass the Yidden. So there was a period of time over there when things were better in Eretz Yisrael than in Bavel. That was the time we learned about. There's a Gemara, for example. Rabbi Yodel. Thank you. So the Gemara tells in Gittin where one time where Rabbi Baba Chana says better we should be if you're not going to have us under your direct protection because we're in Golos, better we should be in Golos by the Romans than by the Persians, because at that point the Romans were better for the Jews than the Persians for that period of history. So that Rambam writes that Rabbi Yirmiyah could have been talking during that time. Whatever the case, anyway, he says never mind Rav Sheshis's answer about because of Hesach Hadas. There's another reason why this Truma Tmeya that was planted is still osur. Haven't you in Bavel heard what Rish Lakish said in the name of Rabbi Oshia? May hachag shenitmu, the water that's going to be, that you're going to be doing nisuch hamayim on Sukkos, if they became tamei. So now, when it comes to water specifically, there's a way of making water tahor that you can't with any other food or drink. You can do hashaka, which is you take the container of water, you dip it in a mikveh so that the water of the mikveh just barely touches the water inside the container. And then then the water in the container is considered bottle to the water of the mikveh. It's called ashaka, and therefore it becomes tahor. So, hishikan v'achaka chikdishan. Now, what you have like this, they fill up the water from the shiloyach spring. They don't yet put it in a kli shoreis. They only put it in a kli shoreis afterwards when they're getting ready to do the nisuch hamayim. In particular, the Mishnah tells us in Sukkah that when it comes Shabbos during Sukkahs, then they would put it in a container that's not one of the kli shoreis over Shabbos, because otherwise it'll become posel with lina. Otherwise, it's posel by the next morning. So they would put it in the Bis Mikdash. They'd put it in the Bis Mikdash in a keli that's not a kli shoreis. And then the next morning, they pour it into the kli shoreis and pour it on the mizbeach. The cliche, once you have kodshim in a klisharis, then yes, that makes it that now if they're left overnight, they're going to become possible, right? With certain rare exceptions of the shulchan, for example, you have the lechem aponim on it for a week, but ordinarily, something is in a klisharis, it becomes possible with lina, yeah. So over here, what you have is then you filled up the water from the shilayach. It's not yet in the klisharis, so it's not yet hikdishan in the sense of kedushas aguf, where now it has this din of lina. So he shikon. So if it became tamei and you did hashaka va'achaka hikdishan, then you were makdish it. Then you put it in the klisharis to hold in. Then it's tahor and you can pour it on the mizbeach hikdishan va'achaka hikshikon. But if you were first makdish it by putting it in the klisharis and then you did hashaka tameim, then they still remain tamei and you can't pour them on the mizbeach. The mikveh doesn't help, in other words. So therefore, now let's consider, says Rabbi Yirmiya, Nechti, let's consider, Zriya Ninu. Why not what? Because, so the reason is because we're going to be talking about in a sugi over here, it's called Mila Osu. There are certain things with Truma and with Kodshim, as now we're going to be discussing, where we say that even though technically something might work in Dinim of Truma Vatara, but because we're dealing with Kodshim or with Truma, therefore we have a special Mila that it doesn't work. Here, once it has Kedushas Aguf, that it was put in the Klisharis, then we say that Hashaka is not going to help for it. Now, he says, Mechti Zriya Ninu. After all, Hashaka is functionally the equivalent of planting it. The same way you plant Truma in the ground, then it loses its status, and now it becomes bottle to the ground. The same way you put water into the mikveh and it becomes bottled to the mikveh water. Mali heshikon v'achaka chikdishon, mali chikdishon v'achaka heshikon. So why would it matter whether you were makdish it in the klisharis before or after you did hashaka? Alma ein zriya lehekdish. Obviously the answer is that when it comes to hekdish, maila osu b'kodshim. So therefore, the fact that you did zriya, the fact that you did hashaka, doesn't help. Hachanami ein zriya l'truma. The same thing. Rabbi Yemiya says you don't need all these doichkim that we had before about the truma tmeya that was planted. The reason why it doesn't change its status, even though it takes away the truma in the sense that it's not matame, other food, but it itself still remains truma tmeya because mila also a truma, because the chacham made a mila when it comes to truma that planting it is not going to change its status. Okay. So since we're talking about that, since we're talking about this matter of being makdish the water, so Yosef Rav Dimi v'ka'amala l'hashmaita, Rav Dimi was sitting and saying over this statement of Rav Yimia, Amale Abaya, so Abaya asks him, what do we mean by hikdisha? Now we just explained that hikdisha means you put him in a klisharis, but he didn't actually specify what that means. Now we know there's different stages in making something hekdish. You have first this kedushas peh, where you verbally say this is designated for hekdish. Later on, you have kedushas aguf when you put it in a kli sharis. So, which one are we talking about over here? Amalei Abai, hikdishin b'kli karmar. Do we mean when once the water was placed in the kli sharis, then it's too late to do hashaka for it? Avo b'peh, but if you just were makdish it verbally, loy over rabbanon mila, did the rabbanon not make the mila over there, and therefore you could do hashaka with this water and it would be fine? Adoma b'peh nami over rabbanon mila, or maybe even once they said verbally, this is for nisach hamayim. Maybe that's enough already to make it that you can't do hashaka. Amalei, so Rav Dimi answers, Zuloi Shamaiti. I didn't hear anything from Rav Yirmiya or from any other of my other Rebbeim explicitly about that, but Kayotze Boshamaiti, but I heard something similar where we can learn from that to this. And here's where we circle back to something that we learned before. Da Amar Abahu Amar Rav Yechanan, Anovim Shenikmu, we said on Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis that if grapes became Tomei, we didn't say this exact thing, but we had a similar case with grapes that became tamei, and we said you squeeze out liquids from them. Soon, actually, we're going to quote the original statement of Rabbi Yechanan that we had on Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, but right now we have a different statement of Rabbi Yechanan. If you have grapes that became tamei, Dorchan v'achakach kedishon, if you squeeze them and then you makdish them to hold him, then they're tahor, and therefore the juice that comes out of them is tahor for nesachim, because as we learned before, Rabbi Yechanan holds that the juice is not considered to be embedded in the flesh of the it's not mivlabli, it's mifkad pkidi, it's as if it's in a container over there. So therefore, when the grapes became tamei, the liquid did not. Therefore, it's good. On the other hand, hikdishan v'achakach dorchan, but if you were first makdish them and then you squeeze them, tmeim, then they're tamei. Now, says Rav Dimi, v'han novim kedushas peh ninu, grapes themselves only have kedushas peh. Grapes can never have kedushas aguf, because you don't bring grapes themselves on the mizbeach, you only bring wine on the mizbeach. Nevertheless, we see that Rabbanan made a mila. So yes, the answer is that in the same thing with the water of Nisach HaMayim, just kedushas peh, just saying this water is being designated for Nisach HaMayim is enough to make that the Mila should kick in, and therefore that you can't do Ashoka with it anymore. However, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef says that's not a valid proof. Anovim kamrit, you're talking about grapes. That's a different case. Hochaba anovim shal truma askinan. There you're talking about, it's not stam grapes of cholin. You're talking about grapes of truma. When we say dishon, we're not talking about you makdish them to hektish. We're talking about you makdish them as truma. You're designating them as truma. Well then, dikdushas ped didhu kikdushas kli damya. Saying that it's truma is the equivalent of putting it in a kli shoreis, because when it comes to kodshim, yeah, you have the different stages over there. First you say this should be kodshim, then you put it in a kli shoreis. Truma, you don't have that. Truma, as soon as you say this is truma, that's it. There's nothing further to be done with it. So therefore, once you say these grapes are truma, automatically that means, so that's the equivalent of Kedushas HaGuf. Sure, that's why we would say the Mila applies. How are you comparing that? Aval Hani, the boy Kli, here, where ultimately it's not good enough to say the water is going to be hektish. You actually have to put it in a Kli Shodis, the Pele over Rabban and Mila. Maybe Rabbi Yosef says you could argue that just if you said it verbally, then the Chachamim didn't make the Mila yet, only when you actually put it in the Kli Shodis. So there's no solid proof for that. Okay. So the Gemara asks, now getting back to, we just said, Rabbi Yochanan said, if you squeeze these grapes, it depends whether it's before you, after you amakdish them, whether the juice will be tahar. What do you mean? Vafilu tuva? Do you mean that you'd be able to squeeze even a lot at a time? Umiyam Rabbi Yochanan hochi? Did Rabbi Yochanan say that? Va'amar Rabbi Yochanan, we learned before, here's where we get to what we learned on Daf Lamed Gimel, anovim shenitmu, grapes that became tamei, dorchan pochas mekabetza. You can only squeeze them less than a kabetza at a time, because that way we said, since you need a kabetza of food to be metame other food, then the grapes will not be able to be metame the juice because you have less than a kabetza over there. So what is Rabbi Yochanan just saying over here, that you can squeeze these grapes and without specifying how many you can squeeze at a time? So the answer is, first of all, one answer is very simple. Here also, where Rabbi Yochanan is making the distinction between whether you're squeezing them before or after you amakdish them, is also talking about you squeezing less than a kabetza. He didn't specify, but he expected us to know what he said before, and that it applies over here also. Or another answer, you could say the difference is that the previous case was that the grapes touched a rishon latruma, so therefore they're a sheni latruma, and therefore you have to do less than a kabetza at a time, because otherwise the sheni latruma will make the juice be a shlishi latruma, and then you can't eat it as truma, and then you certainly can't use it for nesachim. Here we're talking about grapes of truma that touched a sheni. They themselves are a shlishi. Fine, a shlishi can't do anything more as far as truma. The furthest you go by truma is shlishi. So therefore, there's no problem. You could squeeze even more than a kabetza together, because the juice is not going to become tame from it. It's not going to become tame from it anyway. So again, if you were makdish, if you made them as grapes of truma already, then we say mila also with truma, and then we would say the juice does become tamei anyway. But if they were still grapes of chulin, then you don't have that issue. Okay. Amar Rava. So now Rava says, since we're talking about mila, we're saying that there are certain cases where the Chachamim made milas in truma and kodshim. Here's another example. The Gemara is going to now give a couple of other examples where we see that the Chachamim made milas. So once we say that, then yes, we can apply that also to the case of the water of the Nisach HaMayim. We can also apply that to the original subject of the sugya, which is the truma that became tame and then you planted it. We can say that midaraisa, it wouldn't be considered truma, or let alone truma tame anymore, but midarabanan, we would say maila also. So afanan nami tanena, we learn in connection with the water for the paradruma. The pasuk says, v'nasan all of mayim chayim okeli, you put together with the ashes, you put living water, meaning water from a spring, into a keli, and the word chayim el keli means shetei chayusin v'kli. It means it has to be that the same keli that you fill up the water in is where you makadish by putting the ashes in. You can't fill up in one container and then pour it into another. Chayusa, in other words, the livingness of it still has to be directly into the keli. And then the pasuk continues v'nosan. However, the pasuk says v'nosan, that you should place alma tlushin ninhu. So we see that the pasuk on the other hand seems to be implying that the water can be tolush, that you can take the water in one container and then pour it into another. So what do you mean? We just said it has to be connected. We said you have to fill up directly into the container itself. Ela maila. So no, the answer is midrabanan. We're saying shatecha yosin bekli. The words chaim el keli that we're learning it from is an asmachta. But really midaraisi you would be allowed to fill up in one keli and then pour it into another. Midrabanan. We're saying not. So we see there's an example where the Chachamim made a mila. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. Tosfos says it's a doichik, because that has nothing to do with tumah v'tahara. That's to do with a special din that applies to part adruma water, whether we say chayim el keli or whether we say v'nasan. So rather, Tosfos says that what we're talking about is, as far as being mekabel tumah, even if the water is still attached to the spring, you're in the middle of filling up the water from the spring, and we're still saying it's able to become tummy, that we treat it as though it was tlushin, that shows, maila also, that shows that hashoka doesn't work when it comes to water for the parah aduma, and similarly for kodshim, as we said before. So that's the point, that's the connection, in other words, that's the connection, the same way as we said before, that once the water is designated for Nisach HaMayim or poured into the Kli Sharis, whatever, then you can't do Hashoka on it anymore. The same thing over here. You're filling up water for the Parah Aduma. If it becomes Tomei, then Hashoka is not going to help, even though it's still attached, because the Pasuk considers it as if it was detached. And that's an example of a Mila. Okay, Amud of Shimi Ba'ashi, Afanan Nami Tanena. Here is another example where we see that Mila also. We learn in a Mishnah, Tovav Ola, if a person was Tomei, and if a person was Tomei and he toveled and came out of the mikveh, so now at that point he's able to eat Maiser Sheni. Head of Shimshe, once he has head of Shemesh, then he's allowed to eat Truma, implying Betruma ain't Bekod Shemloi. Now at that point he's only allowed to eat Truma, but if he's a Mechusar Kapora, if he's a Zav, a Zava, a Yeledes, etc., then he still needs to bring his Korban before he can eat Kodshim. Now why? Why not? Amai Toharu. Isn't he Toharu at this point? He did everything as far as Tahara that he needs. Ela Maila. Obviously the answer is the Maila. Hachanami Maila, the same thing we can answer over here. There's a Maila when it comes to Kodshim. Now, this that a Mechusa Kapora can't eat Kodshim may be something Daraisa. That itself is a Machloikas. So if we say it's Daraisa, then it means that even Daraisa we see sometimes the Maila to Kodshim over Truma. If we say it's Darabanan, then okay, it means here's another example where the Chum made a Maila of Truma over Kodshim. Amar Rav Ashi Afanan Nami Tanena, and Rav Ashi says here's a third example. We see that there's a maila regarding the dinim of tumah v'tahara when it comes to kodshim. The braisa says that when the posik says v'habosar, we've dealt with this posik before in the first parak. You have a posik that says v'habosar ashiyiga b'chol tomei, if meat of kodshim touches anything that became tomei lo ya'achol, it can't be eaten. And then the posik continues v'habosar and the meat kol tohor yechabosar. Anybody who's tohor can eat the meat. So we learn from that second v'habosar. Or Rashi says we learn from the extra vav, l'rabbis is a etzim or lavoina. It comes to include that wood and lavoina, even though those are not food, if they're wood of kodshim or lavoina of kodshim, then they're able to become tamei. Now, why should that be? Etzim or lavoina b'nei tamuya ninu. Are such things able to become tamei? Ela maila. That's another example of it being a maila. Hochanami maila. The same thing over here. We can answer the chum made an extra maila. Now, again, we're bringing from a pasuk. Does that mean that it is actually daraisa, and it is actually, and therefore we're saying that we're saying therefore that we have an example of a maila daraisa, and the same thing chum can make one's drabonon, or is it that even this concept that etzim olavoina can become tamei itself is drabonon, and the limud from v'habosa is only an asmachta? So you have a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos and Rambam about that question, whether this matter of this concept is called chibas hakodesh. We touched on it in the first parak, where we say that chibas hakodesh allows us to consider things that are not able to be makabel tumah, usually that they're able to be makabel tumah because of the preciousness of kodshim. So is that concept daraisa or drabonon? Rashi and Tosfos argue on that. One possibility that Ramban says as sort of a middle ground, maybe what it is the fact that they can become tomei is daraisa, but the fact that they don't need hechsher to be makabel tumah, the fact they don't have to become wet with one of the shiva mashkim, maybe that part is drabanan. Be that as it may, we see that there are milas when it comes to kodshim. We see that even though the dinim of tumah v'tahara generally apply across the board to everything, kodshim and cholin and tumah, but nevertheless we see that there are exceptions where they apply on a higher level to kodshim or to truma, and therefore we can answer that yes, the case of the truma tmeya that you planted could also be an example of Mila like that. We don't need to resort to the answers that it's only also to Zarim. We don't need to resort to the answer of Hesach Hadas, because we said that only works according to the Shlokish. We can say it's a special Mila that applies to Truma, that even though you planted it, it still retains its status as Truma Tmeya. And therefore that's also to Zarim. Oh, that's also to Koyanim as well, actually, because it's Truma Tmeya, yeah. Okay. Shkoyach, everyone.